Welcome to the Anti-Gamers Podcast. This is episode number 74, recorded on Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017. I'm your host, Evan Minto. With me is my co-host, who I've just managed to pull away from his Wii U, where he is nonstop playing Zelda. It's David Estrella.
Unfortunately.
And we have a guest this episode. It's Tom Aznable, which I don't think is his real name.
It's not.
He's an anime blogger and tweets a lot about Gundam and generally is a pretty cool dude who we're having on the show here. What's up, Tom?
Hey, everybody.
And we brought Tom on because he is the one person, the only person who's not like one of us RPI people who actually came up to Genericon this year.
Well, there was kind of an extended Anti-Twitter invitation, right? And I think a bunch of people kind of bailed at the last minute.
Yeah, blame the Zelda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was the lone hero of that.
So anyway, we'll be talking a little bit about what went down at Genericon, which was pretty cool. I mean, it's a tiny convention, but I think we have some interesting stories from it. We'll also be like going over, that's actually not the right order, but we'll be talking about a little bit of news. And we'll be talking, of course, about the only thing worth talking about from now until I'm done with it in like 150 hours of gameplay, which is The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. But first, let's just like very quickly, Tom, because I know you're not playing Zelda and we got to be fair to our guests. Like, what are you doing? What are you watching? What are you up to?
When I'm not amusing myself by calling it The Legend of Zaldor and not actually having a Wii U or a Switch, because I don't really play video games as much as I used to. I don't know. Right now, I'm kind of doing like panel prep for Anime Boston. Starting last year, I've been part of the All the Mecha You'll Ever Need panel, which this year will be its 10th year consecutively, I think. Wow. So it's a big year for that panel. But one part of that is that it's like five or six people are on it, and one of the recurring segments is like an underrated mecha anime. And basically right before we did it last year, I watched Panzerworld Galleon and wanted to change my underrated mecha thing, but it was already too late. So I'm currently rewatching it. It's this 25-episode, like, post-apocalyptic fantasy mecha show from, like, the mid-80s from the guy who made Votoms. And, yeah, it's pretty great. It's really well-paced. It's got a lot of novel stuff going on. And I would honestly be shocked if the people who made Escaflowne hadn't seen it. It feels like there's a lot of echoes of it in that show. More than just the sort of medieval fantasy mecha thing, like there's a lot of kind of like echoes of characters and plot lines and just the story efficiency in general. But yeah, it's a good show. Unfortunately, not really available here. But I mean, if Giant Gorg came out here, who knows?
Well, hold out.
Yeah, if Miss Machiko can be streamed on Crunchyroll, anything's possible.
Right. Giant Gorg is one of those things, though, that like I know people were like evangelizing for it for like decades. I don't know that anyone's ever been evangelizing for Panzerworld Galleon.
I didn't even know it existed until I saw the opening for that last year.
It's got a really rad prog rock opening. It's very good.
Actually, I ended up, well, because like that thing is like not even, it wasn't even in print. I think there was a Blu-ray recently, right?
It's coming out. There's a, I think it's coming out in May. They just released, like, a few weeks ago on YouTube a comparison video of, like, the DVD master versus the HD master, and it's completely insane the difference. Like, and I think even ANN did a piece recently about, like, how come old anime DVDs look like hot garbage compared to now. And, like, apparently this was the case even in Japan, because the old Galleon DVDs, like, are super muddy. You lose lots of detail in, like, the dark areas, and, like, you watch it compared to the new HD remaster and it's crazy. Like, you actually realize that some of these muddled shapes in the background, it's like, oh, these are like weird chocobo horse things, or like this flag actually has details on it, or like, stuff like that. It's like, oh, this shot that looks like it's mostly green in the standard definition transfer has like purple and yellow in it.
It's kind of insane what a few advancements in coding can do.
And, you know, just, like, actually doing, like, a from-film transfer.
Exactly.
At, like, a higher resolution.
No, so, I mean, imagine people get better at that, like, after, you know, it's been a few years since the dawn of the digital age, so.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, definitely encoding.
Oh, what about encoding?
That's funny you mentioned encoding. That's not the news story we'll be talking about. But yeah, that does remind me of a little bit
full disclaimer. Game, Evan does not work at Crunchyroll anymore.
Oh, I remember hearing about this. This happened like a few days ago, right? We're like,
yeah, there was some controversy over badly. Crunchyroll's bit rates being like dropped in their encoding. They put out a statement about it and stuff, and I probably shouldn't dig into it too much considering I've very recently worked there. But yeah, so in terms of actual news,
real news,
that is, I was gonna say that's less controversial, but never mind. Death Note, the Netflix live action Death Note has got a trailer, and I'm not sure if it's good. It doesn't look like it has much of the like personality of Death Note, which is to say, not, I guess, maybe arguably not that much personality.
I think the only way you can make like a really good Death Note adaptation is if you have a scene of him dramatically eating potato chips.
Yeah, shockingly.
I think that's the only way to win me over personally.
There have been like, what, 3 or 4 different Death Note adaptations, and maybe the closest anybody has gotten to the source material is that first movie that came out years and years ago.
I don't know if I saw that. I think I saw some of like the live action drama recently, which was,
oh boy,
I remember being really bad.
That is on another level. Oh, God. That, I actually watched all that show. Now, like, Death Note is like my go-to if I need like something like that wasn't good from the mid-2000s, but that I will unconditionally just not necessarily love, but like just accept for what it is.
It's you love it the way you'd love like your son who just fails at every subject in school.
Exactly. I'm the father that continuously bails out my very delinquent son.
Yeah, you come into school and you demand that your son's grades be changed to A's. Like, you're that father to Death Note.
Yeah.
So like, it's obviously, I mean, the big conversation that people are having about this is over the whitewashing of it, but even just like, we'll get to that in a sec, but even just as a movie, I mean, it's a little hard to tell what it's doing right now. I see like cheerleaders and things, and it's like, okay,
like,
all right,
you're making this in slow
maybe a little
motion.
Too American. and there's lots of sort of racial things about it that are kind of interesting. I mean, the main character is Light is white and L is black, and there's one Japanese major character in it as far as we can tell.
Well, at least there's more race in that than Ghost in the Shell already.
Well, Ghost in the Shell, the main cast is actually fairly diverse. It's just that Scarlett Johansson is white.
Yeah.
So funny thing about the Ghost in the Shell casting, so I know, I think in one of the early subtitle tracks for Ghost in the Shell, like the original anime movie, they romanized Bato as Bateau. So for like close to a decade, I thought he was French and thought he was supposed to be white. And I think someone even was like, oh yeah, he's like a ex-French Foreign Legion. It's like, oh, okay, cool. So like, I look at him in the movie and it doesn't like occur to me that he's also like one of the whitewashed characters, because I'm still kind of like got that residual initial idea of who Bato is stuck in my head.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't seem unthinkable to me. Is he actually Japanese?
I'm pretty sure he's supposed to be Japanese.
Okay. That's not quite a normal Japanese name as far as I can tell. So it's sort of conceivable that it wouldn't be, that he could be like French or something.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's probably what the original people who translated it thought it was supposed to be.
Right. Also, he's got that like light hair, which I guess is probably supposed to be dyed, but you could think of it as,
I thought,
like,
he was just old.
Right. Like, I don't know. Maybe he's got that light hair.
In innocence, he acts like such an old man.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in innocence, I mean, everything acts like an old man in that movie.
The pacing acts like an old man.
I act like an old man because I fall asleep in my armchair trying to watch it. So I mean, there's a lot of like, you know, high action in the trailer. There's like a probably the end of the movie, which is like a Ferris wheel falling down or something. I avoid trailers for most things, but not for this, because who cares? Like, I don't.
And it's not like it really seems to give away anything.
Right.
There's just kind of like people who fall off a building, and like you said, a Ferris wheel falls down. And there's a blurry shot of Ryuk, like, right after the Netflix logo.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. I like that they don't show Ryuk, but I guess Ryuk is just going to be a giant CG clown monster.
Which... Oh, but they could totally have done him just Willem Dafoe in face paint. They absolutely could.
I really
hope
so. Like, it could still be, that could still be the case.
And it could have been either good or bad, but it still would have worked. He still looks like Ryuk.
So, look, I've been saying for years that in any live-action Death Note movie, Ryuk should be, like, a creepy-looking dude in a suit who, like, looks a little off.
Well, that's just Slender Man.
Right. But I'm saying, like the version of him in the manga and anime works when you're in an animated medium, but when you bring it to live-action, like... He should probably be like kind of otherworldly and weird, but not.
Well, he was definitely over the top. He was definitely otherworldly in all of the adaptations that came before it. I'm pretty sure they're using that stupid limited animation for Ryuk in the new TV series because he was janky. Like the model,
frames per second.
The model was better than the old movies, but the animation was significantly worse.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying, right? That it should blend a little bit better into the world. Like think about what they do in like the Avengers movies, right? Where they in like Marvel Cinematic Universe, where they like take these superhero costumes and make them a little bit more realistic, so they don't jump out at you as much.
I don't know about
you. Should have that sort of adaptation into a live action.
I don't know about you, but that Vision guy always looks like just some asshole dipped in like red paint.
And they should have done that to Willem Dafoe.
I think so.
It sounds like you're advocating for like a Twilight Zone style depiction of the devil sort of salesman guy in a suit.
But just covered in clown face paint, I think is not a bad idea. So anyway, the other obvious like big topic of conversation is that there's like barely any Japanese people in this movie, which I was definitely in the camp of like there, because I was talking about this on Twitter, like I was in the camp of there should be more Asian people, not it doesn't even specifically Japanese people, but just like it's based on an Asian property. It's not unthinkable that you could like take a risk as a producer and cast like a lead Asian character, right? Like an
especially
Asian
with like
actor.
A Netflix movie where it's less of a risk, you'd think they'd be a little less cynical.
That's a good point, actually, because Netflix is making it for a subscription service rather than box office, right? So,
well, more so than any other originals. This seems like really just baked and prepped for American audience. But do they know what an American audience wants from a Death Note movie? Who knows? Because Death Note is also, like, what, over 10 years old at this point? I don't want to say it was like a flash in the pan, but it was definitely a moment in time.
It's also worth mentioning that Netflix... to my knowledge, is like probably not super creatively involved in the movie. And the casting decision might have been made even before Netflix was involved, because this movie was sort of
rescued, wasn't it?
I don't remember
when the casting
happened.
I feel like
the first time I saw
it.
Pictures of Elle was like 2 years ago at this point. It feels like it's been in production a while.
Yeah, it's been in production a while, and Netflix kind of just swooped in and said, like, we'll pay for that to get it finished.
I thought it was like on the verge of getting canned, and then Netflix just said, no, we'll take it.
Yeah. But yeah, there were some interesting conversations on Twitter. Like, I think Justin Savakis was sort of making this point that, like, he was sort of not trying to not constrain the filmmaker, right? I think he's definitely looking at it from, like, the filmmaker's perspective, where he's like, you know, let them tell the story that they want to tell. And I definitely think that, like, yeah, ideally that's the world I want to live in, where it's just let the filmmakers tell their story. But the reality is, like, come on, guys, it's a Japanese property, like, and
it's not quite their story,
right?
It's an adaptation.
It's also just like I don't even want to, because there were arguments about this, I don't want to say that that something being a Japanese property means you need to, when adapting it to America, you need to cast an Asian character, because it just depends on what works for the story. But it's mainly just like in the cultural context in which there are not a lot of Asian actors being cast in movies, and there's a growing demand, or growingly vocal demand for them. And it's like, okay, we're going to adapt this like Asian property, but with no Asian actors. It's like, come on. Like, people are begging you for this. And here's a perfect opportunity to say, like, well, here's why we cast an Asian person. It's an Asian property. Right.
Yeah.
It's like kind of similar to Ghost in the Shell. It's like, if not now, when, right?
And it's almost like
perfect opportunity.
And it's almost like it's kind of bad timing. Like, all this stuff is sort of happening at once. Like, the Death Note trailer drops while there's still all this controversy around Ghost in the Shell. And there's the controversy around Iron Fist.
Yeah. Which is bad. It's extremely
bad. Yeah,
I've
heard it's mediocre at best. I haven't even watched more than a minute of it at this point.
Anyway, we all went to Genericon. Genericon I introduced last podcast as the convention at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, which is the school that David and I both went to in Troy, New York. That city you've definitely heard of. It's like near Albany. It's 3 hours north of New York City. In New York State, which I find out here in California, people don't always know the difference between New York State and New York City. They're like, oh, there's those exist. Are they the same thing? Like, so anyway, it's a college convention run by students up there. I used to be PR person, con chair at the convention, and David and I go back every year and meet up with a bunch of our friends. One of our friends still lives there, and he had a house this year.
So are we gonna put him on blast live on the radio for that house?
I feel like maybe we could gently put him on blast. We love you, Samson.
So if I can just gently put our friend Samson on blast, that house was cold. In like the coldest day in upstate New York.
It was also he said it was also like the coldest night that they'd had in like 3 months.
And the window was left open in the kitchen because they were installing the plumbing for the sink.
It's like an old historic house that he's like purchased basically to fix up, and it's incredibly drafty and not well insulated at this point. It's still very much a fixer upper. And we all slept in the living room and it was very cold.
So like I walked in on like Saturday night because Samson's like, we got a Wii U, we got Zelda. And I'm like, or somebody, David, somebody told me that. And I was like, oh man, I want to see this because Zelda had just come out. This was like March 3rd to 5th was the convention, right? So I show up and I walk in and they're all, it's like five guys or whatever, huddled on these couches in blankets. Like, and they were watching MD Geiss for the first time for Tom, but like yeah. David and Steven, who has also been on this show before.
And we were probably drinking more for warmth than for merriment.
I was surprised because I actually finished that like $40, what? I think it was like a $40 bottle of whiskey. Like,
David was drinking a lot.
Yeah. I think we finished MD Geist, and then I just told like somebody else, like somebody else has to play Zelda because I can't. I spent the rest of the night just like shouting at the TV.
Yeah, then Samson played Zelda, and we basically just yelled at Samson to like take off all of Link's clothes and then murder every single
We needed to empathize with Link in a way that only him walking in his like boxer briefs through the snow could make us feel connected to him.
Well, yeah, because Link was really feeling it, like Shulk. He's just like the ultimate Shulk costume where he's just wearing the boxer briefs. But anyway, that's Zelda. this is a bit of a trend in Genericon is we go for the events and then we end up just like hanging out with Samson the whole time.
Heck yeah, that's where the real con's at.
But in my case, I actually had to be like doing con stuff because, as I mentioned last episode, I was the guest handler for the Studio Trigger guests who were at this tiny 2,000 person college convention as like guests of honor. So it was Hiromi Wakabayashi and Shigeto Koyama, the two guys who generally show up at cons. They're like, I mean, Wakabayashi is actually publicity. Koyama's just but he's a designer. But for some reason, he ends up coming out too for publicity stuff.
And he's not exclusively a Trigger guy either. Like, I know that the norm in Japan is like everybody's a freelancer, but it seems like Trigger guys in general are pretty tight with each other. Mm-hmm. It seems like of them, he's the one who gets around the most.
Yeah, and he's like kind of one third of something called Geek Boat, which is a collective of three guys at Trigger who, like, they make a lot of stuff together. I think they're generally like where a lot of the crazy Imaishi stuff comes from. So like Geek Boat is actually credited on Sex and Violence with Mox Beat. I think they're the original creator. And Geek Boat is basically just, it's Imaishi, Wakabayashi, and Koyama. So Imaishi is the one who doesn't end up showing up at cons, but like they're basically two thirds of this core group of Trigger creatives. And Wakabayashi is like not just publicity. He's also like a producer and writer and sometimes direct stuff. And he's animated before. He's like done a little bit of everything. So anyway, they were at the convention. And so I was kind of just driving them and Tatun, the PR guy from Trigger, around upstate New York, the most exciting place.
Well, you guys have a Target, a Walmart, and a movie theater. So you must have been pretty busy.
At one point, they asked me, like, what is this area known for? And I was like,
the home of Uncle Sam.
There's that. Troy is known for being the home of the original guy that Uncle Sam was based on. That's, like, the best that it's got.
I didn't realize it was based on an actual guy.
Yeah, reportedly, it's based on some guy who, like, worked at some factory or something in Troy, and he was super patriotic. And they were like, make that guy the country mascot.
A lot of those factories are still around, but whether or not they're operational,
yeah, now they're like art galleries or something. Because yep. Troy's got a little bit of like an art revival. But anyway, I barely got to go to events at the convention other than the ones I was in, because I was running like 3 or 4 panels, including one with Trigger, and I was also, you know, at Trigger's panel and getting them back and forth between like autograph signings and things, and like taking them to go see Logan and the movie theater in like IMAX.
So anyway. Logan was really good.
Logan was pretty good. We were talking a lot about
Superheroes. not really an IMAX movie though.
No. It was also, as Tom told me, a whole lot of stabbing.
More stabbing than I've ever seen in a movie.
That movie was pretty intense. That was like sadly intense. It was so sad. Yeah.
So did you guys get to go to any panels and like kind of see the con?
I think I only got to go to the ones that you hosted. Was a panel I wanted to go to that was like anime of like the year 1987 or something.
Yeah, that looked good. I didn't get to go to it.
Yeah, it got canceled. So I didn't make it out to that one.
Yeah, Tom was kind of our guest and also our hostage.
I was in an unfamiliar place. I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, no, this year was the first year we had that house, but that house is like 3 times farther than where we were originally staying at every year before this. So before it was like just like, you know, just swing by the con, just walk to it, and now you have to drive. And when you finally get out into that wonderful single digit Troy, New York degree weather, you definitely don't want to be outside too much.
Yeah, it was, I mean, we already kind of touched on it, but ridiculously cold. But I have to say,
it's only 3 hours north, but it's like much colder than New Jersey or New York City is.
Evan, seeing your panels in what was basically a lecture hall setting, though, definitely made them feel more educational.
Nice. That's like the glasses effect, where it's just like put glasses on and people think you're smart. It's just like give all your anime, your stupid cartoon lectures.
But it's like Evan is teaching
a lecture hall. Yeah.
Dang. I know Evan gives a bunch
open
of
your
panels
textbooks
that are really good, but I think one of my personal high points for Genericon, like any Genericon across all these years, is that, like, what was it, like the 2-hour Gachimuchi panel at like midnight.
That was an experience.
Like that extremely well researched Gachimuchi panel. No, we didn't get to go because it was like at an insane hour, and I think generally we just weren't at the con at night.
David, I don't know. I don't remember if we described this in the last year's Genericon episode, but tell the listeners what Gachimuchi is.
So Gachimuchi is an art form. It's like a mixed media.
Not kid stuff.
Yeah, it's like a mixed
totally
media
unexpected
sort of like phenomenon. It's like, it's mainly, I guess, like mainly at this point, like just sourced by like anybody that wants to make a Gachimuchi like just piece can do it. They just, the resources are out there. Just Google it and then, you know, go wild.
So your explanation of Gachimuchi is just Google it.
Yeah. No, it's like asking me like, well, like, you know, how do you draw manga? Obviously you pick up a paper and a pen. So with Gachimuchi, you just acquire these video clips, these audio clips, and you mash something together and bring some beautiful art into the world.
So when I have Googled it, the first little blurb that Google shows me is from a Reddit thread. It says, Gachi Muchi is a stereotype of macho gay. That's what it's telling me. I don't know if I'm getting the right thing here.
I think whatever the internet tells you is right. just trust Wikipedia or whatever, wherever you are. I actually don't totally remember the details of what it is, which is why I deferred to David, but then he gave a non-answer. So now we're stuck with this.
You made it sound like it was some kind of Dadaist art form, which it very well might be.
I think it kind of is. I think it may... Why not both, right? I mean...
Right. So this is like a Tuchan Nico Nico meme is what I'm seeing
sort
here?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. So what you're saying is so it's a movement.
I'm gonna be real. I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, it's like a bunch of mashups of some sort of like particular piece of gay porn. Possibly.
I thought there was.
I don't totally
more to
remember.
You're warm. You're getting close to on track there.
Okay.
The incomparable
so anyway,
youth movement of Gachi Muchi.
Anyway, so you guys did get to go to the trigger panels, which I think they top the Gachi Muchi panel. Like the
I only
the trigger,
went to the first one. I was on a train when that second one was running.
Right, right. The second one was mine, so I wasn't really gonna, like, because that's the one I did with them. I wasn't gonna say that that was the best panel because, like, that would be weird. But the just normal, like, trigger panel was pretty great. Part of it was really funny because I told them, like, people here really like Inferno Cop because, like, you know, people at Genericon do. And I tried to make clear to them that it's like, you know, Kill la Kill is probably the big popular favorite, but Inferno Cop, there's, like, a lot of Inferno Cop fans at the con. And they were just like, all right, this panel is going to be almost entirely about Inferno Cop.
So I was wondering about that because they were on the program as like Kill la Kill. I mean, like Trigger, like the creators of Kill la Kill and something like Inferno Cop. And I think maybe 2/3 of the panel was Inferno Cop related.
I really would like to defend myself by saying that I did tell them that Kill la Kill is like a big fan favorite. It's just that I think I maybe pushed them a little too far into the Inferno Cop world by telling them that people at Genericon liked it.
I feel like every trigger panel I've been to at any con has basically been them being like exasperated by Inferno Cop love.
I feel like they're not exasperated, though. One of the best things about the panel was they were like talking about how like, you know, American fans are the only ones who truly get Inferno Cop. They were
right.
Like... That they had a line where they said, like Wakabayashi was saying, like the fact that Americans love Inferno Cop is proof that you're an advanced nation, and that like the he said that because you're all at a university and you're college students, which isn't true. Most of the people there are high school students, but despite me telling them that, I don't think it got through. They're like, because you're all college students and you're well educated, that's why you can understand the comedy of Inferno Cop.
So does Japan not have like an Adult Swim equivalent? Because I feel like people were prepared for Inferno Cop by things like weird Adult Swim comedies. Like,
right. I think it's a particular style of humor that anime doesn't really do. It's like this very kind of acerbic, just really like low quality comedy, right? Like low quality animation where it's just sort of the joke is it's all irony, right? It's like,
right, it's reveling like, in a lack of effort.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, exactly, we didn't try too hard, so like that's what makes it funny is we just sort of half-assed this thing.
Yeah, we drew the fuck like, out of these stills, but like they don't
right.
move at all.
Yeah, yeah. So like that's a form of comedy I don't really see much in anime. I mean, Gouda Gouda Fairies has that, which is why that's also a pretty phenomenal show.
And
but
the people
really
who made that made a
anime.
Bunch of other stuff, and I think they're basically the only other comparable one that I'm aware of that did that intentionally.
Right, right. And the rest of their stuff isn't always good, but I mean, it's going for the same sort of ethos as Gouda Gouda Fairies. But yeah, that's one of the things I found the most entertaining is hearing the trigger guys, like specifically Wakabayashi, I think, because I think it's very much his... Koyama might have been the original, like, had the original idea, but I think Wakabayashi really likes Inferno Cop, right? Just hearing him sort of, like, you know, express this idea that it, that, you know, you guys get it though. Like the people in my country don't get it, but I found the people who do get it. Like, it's pretty great. Yeah. And they also showed the Anime Next Infernal Cop episode, the first one, which I think they told us we shouldn't tell people what's in it, but there are cameos from some characters in that
Uncleared, uncleared cameos.
Never, even the director of said work is not even aware of, apparently.
Yeah. It's pretty good. They only show them at conventions. They've never released them in any sort of like
online. It would have definitely been weird if they had played the second Anime Next clip there, since that one was so con specific.
Yeah, because it like takes place in New Jersey and is entirely about New Jersey.
And 3 minutes of it are them, are Inferno Cop leading the crowd chanting New Jersey. And also, like, what is it? The Vice Con chair is in short. Yeah.
So, as New Jersey's great man.
That's right. And it takes place in Atlantic City.
I'm really hoping that next year, if Genericon can get Trigger back, they've got an RPI-specific Inferno Cop episode. And it had better have, like, Uncle Sam in it, because I told them that it was the birthplace of Uncle Sam. So,
so we're here in... We're here at the birthplace of America.
So can we do like
America's dad?
Can we do like the Mecha Cop, but it's like just a an American skin to it, so it's like Uncle Sam version of Mecha Cop, and just have that. that's Uncle Sam.
Well, no, they would totally do that because it's basically just Iron Patriot. So like they'd be into it. It's like a Marvel thing.
True.
Anyway, so that was. It was super cool having them at the con. They signed a bunch of stuff for people, which is like great because it's such a small con. People got to get tons of stuff signed and get like personalized drawings and things like that. So they signed the cardboard Inferno Cop standee that the staffer made, which they also, the con had on display at all of their panels. So like in any of their events, Inferno Cop was just like there hanging out with them.
And it wasn't like something somebody printed out and pasted to cardboard. It was actually like hand done, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That girl hand drew that thing with Sharpie and like pasted together a bunch of pieces of cardboard. And she loves it. It's like her life work. She brought it to get signed and she was so excited that they drew Hellfire Boy on it and stuff like that. Yeah.
And they drew you as a dog.
It's really cool. They also drew me as a dog when I eventually was getting dinner with them in New York later, and like I had forgotten to get a signature at the autograph session, so at dinner I was just like, could you sign this? And then Koyama drew me as a dog, and then Wakabayashi added a drawing of Luluko saying fuck you Evan with like an A.
It's a good call.
Anyway, it was just I think I was pretty happy about just the experience of having these guys who are, compared to other Japanese guests, they're very like engaged with fans, right? They really like to talk to fans. It's not like, you know, I think other Japanese guests probably also enjoy it, but they're maybe a little less like outgoing about it, right?
Well, because they've got like 4 or 5 different handlers on them.
That too. But yeah, like they're very, they have this very kind of like more free form way of interacting with fans, and they're really excited to see people and like to meet people who like their work. And they like have a lot of fun, right? So like that's pretty infectious. And to have that in a small convention where, you know, everybody gets a chance to sort of like, you know, come up to them and get something signed and talk to them and meet them is really cool.
Do you know if they're like that at Japanese conventions? Because I've only
Japanese
ever seen
conventions
them.
Are very different.
Right. They're very managed. They're very like PR focused. I just don't know if I've ever even seen like a clip of them at like a Japanese event.
Yeah, I don't know what they're like. I mean, Japanese events, even just structurally, are very different from anime conventions here, to my knowledge. They're more like just one-off events for certain shows and things like that, but there's less of this like big party atmosphere that anime cons have here. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it might be that like different people end up being the, you know, front face of them in Japan, right? Mm. Like, I bet Koyama doesn't come out to those. Like, Wakabayashi probably does because Koyama probably does if he's being like interviewed, right? But not as like a Trigger ambassador, which is almost like what he and Wakabayashi are, right? Anyway, you guys, final thoughts? You enjoyed Genericon? You didn't enjoy Genericon? Did you like freezing in a large house?
Yeah, MD Geist was really sick. Yeah. Like for like however many times I've watched it. That was your first
time, Tom.
Right. So I got the first time I ever saw MD Geist, despite having seen him at the beginning of a great many US Manga Corps releases, my first time actually watching the show, probably in pretty good circumstances, considering that we were all drinking to stay warm. But I have to say, like, I was kind of surprised by the first one, where I didn't feel like it was that bad.
No, I genuinely like that thing. And that soundtrack is
the soundtrack is amazing. Awesome. It's unironically great. But I remember, because Evan, you came in at the end of Death Force, and you asked me, like, how did you not see the ending of the first episode and go, like, what? And my reaction was just like, yeah, of course. He's just an evil asshole who wants to fight and kill forever, and now he has an unending army of robots to do that too. It's like, yeah, of course he did that.
Listen, I don't know. The first time I watched that first OVA, I was just like I expected him to be the hero, I guess. And then like at the end, when it completely comes out of nowhere and he's like, I turned the Death Force back on.
No, I lost it.
That's my thing. I don't know that it comes out of nowhere. Now, to be fair, we watched the director's cut, which from what I understand makes a lot more sense than the original version of it, so that might be part of the reason why it didn't surprise me.
There's one that's like even more of a director's cut, I think. That there's one that like splices in the Laserdisc parts.
Oh boy.
I don't know if we were watching that one.
But I mean, I think what I expected to get from MD Geist 1, I definitely got from Death Force, because it was hilarious. It had a great dub. But they definitely tried to actually tell more of a story in it. Music wasn't as good though.
I thought, you know, I didn't really have a high opinion for the second OVA, but I don't know, maybe it was just because at that point I was kind of a little bit tiny bit destroyed, but I thought it stood up. Like, definitely the first OVA is just untouchable. It's gold. But I think the second one just makes me want a third one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The moment the second one ended, I'm like, where's MD Geist 3?
Yeah. Like, honestly, just bring back the band, just make another soundtrack. Even if it's not as good, like, as long as it's a vehicle for another soundtrack
If there's anything that needs, like, an anime Kickstarter, it's to get Koichi Ohada to make MD Geist 3. God.
You know, he's been at, like, one...
He doesn't actually like one, it, right?
No, he's been at, like, one event. And, right. Like, I have a friend who got MD Geist signed from the guy. And he asked him for, like, more MD Geist. And then Ohada was like, you know, if you really like it, do you think it's really popular? Then maybe a Kickstarter or something. Maybe something like that will work. So I think Ohada might be ready for a
I haven't watched the commentary track, but I hear it's amazing because it's the entire time is him talking about how the staff hated him and how he doesn't remember working on any of it. So, I don't know. He might not have such a... He might not be so hot on it.
Well, you know,
if you could raise enough money to compel Koichi Ohada to just grit his teeth and make MD Geist 3, that would be an impressive accomplishment all on its own.
Yeah. So, after MD Geist, So, I was in no state to play Zelda, so I just had Samson play Zelda. And we were just screaming at the TV, because that game is a game. That is a video game right there.
Well, I think our modus operandi at that point was just, like, run around like a shithead and just, like, kill as many things as you can.
Which is not too far.
I know, every single time... Every single time he came across, like, a Macoblin group, which we began referring to as, like, the outposts from the Phantom Pain... it's just like, just kill them all. And then eventually you get an iPad, and then you get some apps, and then you could cast spells with your apps. That's about as much of the game that I saw.
It's Zelda for the millennials.
That's right. Right,
that's right. I hadn't been keeping up with all the news on it, and I think I must have seen a demo before, but I forgot about it. I was pretty annoyed when I was like, this game's got apps too. Everything has fucking apps. It's like 2017. Like, seriously? Zelda well, you needs can take, to have apps?
You could take a selfie in that game, right? Or did I just see a meme that
not,
that?
I think no. You could reverse the cameras.
I don't think you can.
I feel if like... You, okay.
I haven't even... The thing is, though, I've played it so much, and then, like, I don't dig into certain, like, little touches on stuff.
Maybe
so
you there might haven't be, gotten those
there
apps.
Might be, like, a reversible camera on your Zelda iPad.
it's entirely great. Possible, actually. And actually, that ties into something, because I'm playing a lot of it, right? I have a Switch that I very luckily got through somebody, because I did not remember to pre-order it. So that it's interesting thing about the reversible camera, because it ties into, like, one of the best things about the game is the fact that, despite the fact that it's an open-world game where you get most of... You get everything you need to navigate the world at the beginning. It expands fairly, like, consistently as you play and you, like, find more stuff. At least for me, I find that, like, I'm always discovering new things in the game, even though you sort of expect, and, like, even new mechanics. You expect in an open-world game that wouldn't happen, that you just, you know, you'd find a new place or you'd get more money or you'd get more items. But, like, I find that there's new ways of interacting with it that I discover that I'm like, I didn't know I could do that. And so it's like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some feature somewhere, like someone upgrades your Sheikah slate thing and lets you take a, you know, reverse like a selfie with your camera, right? It's like, why not, right? Like,
well, the thing I specifically saw was like, and you guys probably saw this on Twitter, it was like the first time you kill one of those like robot guardians that like before then like kill you one hit, like reflects yeah. it and then like... reverses the camera, takes a selfie, posts it to Facebook, and like Zelda and Ganon are like posing as like, oh, he thought he was cool, whatever, and then he like slow motion walks away from the explosion. So it very well may have just been somebody edited it to be that way, right. But I'm very happy that that video exists.
Yeah, it's just so many ridiculous videos that you see. Like, there's the I think like one of like the first guys that discovered that you can chop down a tree and then freeze yep. it in time and then just whack it with a hammer and then surf on the tree and then just fly across the map.
Yeah, yeah. And you can do that same thing with like rocks and lots of other objects.
Yeah, so
we should quickly intro what the game is about though.
What is this game? We didn't even say the title yet. It's The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild for Switch and Wii U.
Yeah, so I mean, if you've been on the internet for the past couple weeks, you probably know what this is. But it's the new Zelda game, and I obviously don't need to intro what Zelda is. But yeah, it's radically different from a lot of other Zelda games. So it's open world for one thing, which like sort of, you know, Ocarina of Time is kind of open world, like some, and the original Zelda is pretty open world. So that's like not super new, but they basically added a whole lot of like maneuverability mechanics, like climbing and paragliding and things like that, and like jumping, which you couldn't do in other Zelda games.
No rolling,
yeah, which you used to be.
No
able
rolling
to
really screws me up.
Really?
Yeah, but can't basically roll. They opened up the world compared to other Zelda games, which have generally been very much about gating, about like you can't get through here until you get this item. And instead of doing that, you can go anywhere. And you can tackle the dungeons in any order. And they created this massive world, like probably not the biggest open world in any game, but like it's up there for sure.
It's just it's that draw distance, really, that just gives you that impression that it's
right
enormous. I finally registered every part of the map yesterday.
Oh, I haven't even done that yet.
And then I finally got the goddamn horse.
Hey, don't spoil me.
No, it was just a horse. Like, I'd never gotten on a horse.
Oh, you had never ridden a horse?
I'd never ridden a horse until, like, three dungeons in.
Wow. That's crazy, because, like, you have to run around a lot if you don't have a horse.
I ran around a lot.
Wow.
Isn't there, like, a fast travel system? Yeah. Like, through the temples or yeah. something?
Right, but you can't fast yeah. travel to a place you haven't been before, so.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so... Honestly, like I walked through most of the game and then just fast traveled when I needed to get somewhere I've already been to.
Right. So like it's interesting because if someone asks like, okay, so what's the big deal? What's the new thing this Zelda game does? There's not really an answer because it's like everything it does is something another game has done before. Pretty much everything. I can't think of many mechanics it's done that it's like the first to do it. Or, you know, maybe it's the first to do it in that particular way. I mean, it has like, you know, it has stealth mechanics. It has climbing. It has I guess I haven't seen a game where you have to like tame horses, but I also haven't played like Barbie's Horsey Adventure or whatever.
I've never seen a game that's gotten people so thirsty for a shark man before.
That's true. There's never been a video game before where you could fuck a shark.
No, Nintendo's been like ultra horny. Like basically every village that I've visited and every stable has at least like one character that's like awkwardly horny Link.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's sort of like what Ms. Marvel is for Marvel Comics. Like, they're the audience insert character. This is every character who wants to bone Link.
And honestly, like, Link...
The audience wants to bone the shark, though.
I feel like I've seen more of the shark man than anything. And I didn't even know what he was supposed to be until, like, yesterday.
He's a Zora. He's like a character who's a Zora.
He literally has a shark for a head and then like a beefy ripped body.
He's twice as tall as Link too. So that's like that's really hot for some people.
Yeah, that's got to be somebody's thing. I'm sure
he's also really nice too.
He's really just, you know, encouraging.
He's encouraging.
He's a nice guy to be around.
He's royalty.
He likes Link a lot. Yeah,
likes Link
he's
a
rich.
Lot too.
He's got a nice car.
Yeah.
He's got a good job. His job is sit around and be the prince. So, like, it's interesting, right? Like, other games have had cooking mechanics. Other games have, you know, obviously, like, other Zelda games have had, like, riding horses and the puzzles. And, like, nothing in it is particularly new.
But no
right?
apps,
But the
though.
Way it all works together.
They've never had apps before. when you cast spells, you have to have, like, Furore's Wind or something and not, like... The world is the app store is basically the conceit of the game.
You gotta pay like 5,000 rupees to get like the good rolls for all your apps to rares.
In-game transactions are with the in-game currency that you can't spend actual money on.
It's not Nehru's love, okay? It's Nehru.love.
Oh boy.
And it's like din.io or whatever. They're the new app versions.
Wow, they sound like really lame Twine games suddenly.
There's actually going to be DLC, actually, now that I think about it, right?
Yeah,
I've seen that ominous DLC menu option whenever I boot up the game, and I'm thinking, like, what are they going to add to this?
David, I haven't seen that menu since the first day I got it because I haven't booted down the game. Like, I just put my Switch because I don't have any other games on my Switch. So I just put it to sleep and I wake it back up and I play Zelda. So like, I haven't seen the menu. So anyway, like, I was going to say that basically what makes the game unique, which is like something, I guess, it's not super unique. I don't know. Like, it's just that it's like, it's weird. It's good. But like, more specifically, what I'm getting at is like the way the mechanics work together is not quite like any Zelda game or many other open world games that I've seen, right? Like, if you compare, like, I went back and played some of The Witcher, and it's, you know, I played like some Elder Scrolls games, and I like open world games a lot. The thing is that they are very often either like, they've got sort of some canned things that you can do, right? Like your interactions with the game are based on certain kind of preset like lines of action, right? It's like, okay, you can shoot the enemy with your gun, but like, there's not a lot of experimentation you do. Once you figure out that you can shoot the enemy, you get different guns that do different things when you shoot, and that's it, or something, right? In like a Fallout game or something like that.
Well, kind of avoiding is also the fact that it's Zelda.
Well, yes, there's a
history.
It is a very pretty, like, brightly colored game, and I feel like, I don't know, not having played that many open world games, I do feel like a lot of them don't really look that way.
Zelda's gorgeous. That whole
it's
game.
It's very pretty.
That I mean, the night comparable, and day cycle.
The comparable visual, like, thing would probably be, like, the Fable games, right? And that they're, like, very
bright.
Yeah,
but even that is going for, like, a more realistic, like, look than what Breath of the Wild does.
But I mean, I definitely don't want to say it's just because it's Zelda, because there's particular things about the way that the mechanics are all sort of hooked up to each other that encourages a lot of experimentation with them that I don't see in a lot of other games. I mean, I didn't play Metal Gear Solid 5, but that might have some similar stuff to it.
Well, like, I mean, Metal Gear Solid 5 was very open to whatever kind of playstyle you wanted, which was nice because like a lot of other the Metal Gear Solid games were just like, there are certain parts of this game where there's only really one right way to do it.
But actually, Metal Gear games are one of the closest equivalents I would probably point to, where like there are a lot of different pieces, like little, you know, mini mechanics that like you can put them together and like, you know, the people making it paid attention to how you might combine those things to make interesting like interactions between them, right? As opposed to everything just being like, okay, you learn how to do these mechanics and you do each of them in isolation. So like in Zelda, it's pretty magical because anytime you think, can I do these things in this order and like string them together or whatever, or combine them, like you can, right? You can shield surf down a hill, jump off of a cliff while shield surfing.
I saw something yesterday that was like, I was actually really impressed by that you could tackle puzzles in ways that you're not necessarily being railroaded into, where it was like a conductive electricity puzzle, and dude just like took everything out of his inventory, lined up all his metal weapons together, and made it work that way. Like, it's like, wow, that's actually really cool that there's a lot of polish.
Some of those shrines are really bad. Like you might run into the one where it's like controlled by the gyro. And so what I end up doing is just like ping pong paddling the stupid marble into the hole.
Me too.
Like there's a whole maze that you have to figure, but it's so inaccurate on my Wii U gamepad. So I just let the marble fall into that bottomless hole. And then when it comes out again, it's got enough, just it's coming down with enough force so I could just smack it where I need it to go.
But I mean, the example I was giving was where I shield surfed down a hill, called my horse, shield surfed down a hill, like jumped, paraglided, landed on my horse while it was running toward me. And then like, you know, Link gracefully lands on the horse and the horse starts running, right? Like somebody had to test all that stuff and make sure all those pieces would work together. And like, not every game would do that, right? They would make like, you know, some other games would just have like the paragliding be one mechanic and then the shield surfing be another mechanic and not ensure that like they dovetail into each other in that way. Or even like you mentioned about metal weapons, like you can get hit by lightning if you're wearing metal weapons during a thunderstorm, but you can also, like, there's a mechanic where, you know, enemies will drop their weapons sometimes and they'll pick up whatever weapon is near them. So you can make them drop their weapons, drop your metal weapons, then then pick up their wooden weapons so that they pick up your metal weapons during a thunderstorm and they'll get struck by lightning, I did to them at one point. Right. And like it encourages that kind of experimentation where you're like, well, can I do this? And like very often, remarkably often, the answer is yes in Breath of the Wild, which is like crazy. I very rarely played a game where like I felt that sense that anything I wanted to try could actually be done. And I also add to that, and David, you maybe have you probably run into this a lot. Like the game also just doesn't. You mentioned this with shield surfing. The game doesn't tell you a lot. Like it tells you just enough, and then the rest of the education that you get from the game is just spread around the world. So you need to go to the right places and talk to the right people to learn about different things about how the world works.
So how do I do it?
You can do it the whole time, right? Just nobody's told you how to do it yet. But you can. You hold your shield button and then you like jump and press A in midair or something.
Wow.
But basically I found there's one area where there's a bunch of characters who shield surf. And so you'll run into people who will tell you how to do it there. And then on the other side of the world, there's a hill with two guys on it who shield surf. And like, that's it. So if you don't go to the other side of the world and you're on that one side, if you're on like the eastern side, the only way you'll learn how to shield surf, as far as I can tell, is by talking to those guys on that hill. Like, and those happen to also be the only place I found that will sell you shields as opposed to picking up shields from enemy drops. They actually have shields on sale at the top of this hill. Not in the town, just some random spot in the middle of the wilderness. There's like all sorts of stuff like that. That's basically like, it's, I mean, I'm really in love with this, so I'm going to just gush about it. Like there's all these things that you find that are so scattered, right? And so unique that it feels like really rewarding when you find that. And like specifically the uniqueness, I think, is really important. So like the fact that I have yet to find another place that sells shields creates this like social experience when talking to other people where they're like, ah, man, I keep having trouble, like, you know, holding on to the shields that I want because all the weapons and shields, all the equipment, like, degrades. There's like a durability system. And, you know, the fact that I can tell them there's a one place that I've ever found that sells shields and it's some hill and I don't remember specifically where it is like this crazy experience that's not very common in games.
That sounds very like early internet, like Super Nintendo, like RPG type thing. Where, like, you wouldn't necessarily know a thing until you talked to, like, your friend who's also playing it. So that's pretty neat.
I also, I just discovered yesterday, and I tweeted about this, and this speaks to a larger design decision, I think, that they made. So there's the recipe system where you collect materials, like food and stuff, and then you can put it together in a pot and cook stuff. There's no recipe book, right, which is very much the ethos of this game, where it's, like, you don't collect recipes, you collect materials, and you just have to remember what the recipes are. There's no recipe. I mean that at least as far as I've been, your character doesn't, there's no page of your like pause menu that gives you the list of recipes that you've created, at least as far as I've gotten,
because I haven't found one, but as far as I know there might be one.
What I do know there are is books in the world that describe recipes to you, right? But they're like, you know, it's just a book somewhere that has three recipes in it and you just have to write them down or remember them. But what I've also found is in the stables where you can like call your horse, there are posters in apparently every stable, or at least the two that I went to since realizing this, there are posters with visual representations of recipes, but there's no like button prompt. You just have to see them on the wall and remember them.
Yeah, no, I can't tell you how many times like I've interacted with a puzzle part with like a button, and I'm like, no, it's not a button. I have to like engage it with like my with my app, or like I have to hit it with something. Like, there's almost not a whole lot of button pressing to like figure things out.
There's a certain lack of, I guess, like affordance is the UX term, I think, which is like this. You know, it's the element of some, you know, some object that tells your brain that you can interact with it, right? It's like having a button that's raised and that has like a different color or something like that. And there's definitely affordance in the game. Like, video games are kind of impossible without it. But whereas other games kind of bash you over the head with that, and they're like, you know, even a Zelda game, it's like, how do you know whether you can blow something up with a bomb? Well, the wall is cracked, and they're all cracked with the exact same sprite to tell you that they're cracked, right? Yeah. But like, in this game, there are things like the recipes on the walls that it's like there is no button prompt. There's nothing that the game tells you this is something you can interact with, because your interaction happens at this like abstract level outside of the game. It's the interaction of just seeing it, recognizing it, remembering it, and then cooking with it later, right? And it like creates this experience where I can play for 40 hours and go to like 8 different stables, and then at the 40-hour mark, realize that there's recipes inside of all these stables that I've been in.
So even though I'm technically farther than Evan at this game, we've got the same amount of time invested in it.
Well, it's because you've been walking everywhere.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's up with that, actually, because you've finished way more dungeons than me, and you've unlocked all the towers, apparently. I've unlocked 8 of like 15 or whatever.
And I don't know how to shield surf. And I just got my horse yesterday.
Right, and that's crazy. Like, people can play this in all these different orders. I just got wheat for the first time recently, which I was like, oh my god, now I can make cakes, right?
And it
was
I saw that post that you made, and like I wanted to like just scoff and be like, huh, I've been making Goron curry for like days, but I didn't want to like say anything, because you know, some of this stuff kind of feels a little bit like a spoiler, because you also like want to just find out like, well, what can I make with the wheat,
right? Or even just like, you know, the reason that it took me that long was because I took a while to like, you know, I did a lot of exploring instead of going.
You had to go to the wheat place, and I know what the wheat place is.
Right.
So I can't really say like, well, I got the wheat at this place, because you don't know where it would have been.
Well, and the ingredients are somewhat regional too, right? So it's if you don't go to this particular region of the map, you may never get wheat. But even then, like Goron Spice, which I thought I had to go to like Death Mountain to get, I ran into a trader who sold me some Goron Spice, right? Like,
yeah, it's always worth like just stopping. Like I'll be in the middle of just like paragliding to some shrine, and then I'll see like a little bit of movement on the ground, and I'm like, wait, this guy might have some Goron Spice. And then I'll just stop whatever I'm doing and just talk to the guy and buy whatever he's got.
Well, and all those traders and adventurers apparently have defined schedules in the game where they'll like, you know, cycle the map in some particular set of time and come back.
Not that I have ever noticed.
Right. And like even getting the Master Sword, which I haven't done yet, but I've slight spoiler, I've kind of like found it, but I don't have it yet. That like there's a quest for it. But basically, you can just end up finding the Master Sword by getting hints from people all around the world who just tell you, like, oh, there's, like, a famous sword somewhere. Yeah. I heard it was over there, maybe. But, like the, it's not even that direct. It's somebody just being like, I heard it's in, like, this kind of place, but I don't know where. And then, like, someone else being like, oh, it's on this side of Hyrule, maybe. And if you piece that all together, you can end up finding it, or you could just run into it by accident. Like, it's this super organic experience where, like, the story that you tell about how you found the iconic Zelda weapon could be 100% different from mine, right? Like,
my experience was accidentally paragliding into the force field of the area where it was. And then it was, like, it was such a, like, a unique experience where, like, I didn't know before that the sword might have been there. But then the moment that I tried to paraglide into the area, this just interesting looking area, and then because it deflected me back, then I'm like, that's gotta be it. I've been looking for the fucking sword everywhere, and that's where it is.
Yeah, like that, and that's it too, is like it really encourages this exploration, because there's, like I said, there's always like unique, interesting things around every corner. So you kind of like, you want to just be like, all right, that like mountain looks interesting, and like those interesting things are sometimes, again, like not necessarily tied into like waypoints and quests and like all the sort of like the very, you know, to-do listy stuff that other open world games give you. Like I climbed to the top of a mountain just because I was trying to get a good view of stuff, and at the top of the mountain I found like a little statue and a sword stuck in a rock, and I was like, wait, what is this doing here? And like there's no explanation, there's no quest, it's just, it's a cool sword that somebody left at the top of the mountain, and like that's your little reward for climbing this mountain, right? Like there's all these accidental things you run into, and on top of that, I should probably mention what I think is probably the most brilliant design decision in the whole game, because I think it actually underpins a lot of it, is that the there's these collectibles, the Korok seeds that you get by finding Koroks, kind of like maybe the equivalent would be like Assassin's Creed flags, which are the most dumb mechanic, right? But unlike that, where like the flags all show up on your map, the Korok seeds never show up on your map until you've already gotten them. There's also over 900 of them in the game world. And there are all these puzzles that sometimes you don't even recognize are puzzles. Like it'll just be a flower on the ground or a tree where like something about the tree looks a little weird. And you have to figure out that it's a puzzle and then how to solve the puzzle. And in doing that, by making the puzzles like integrated into the environment, it basically makes, for me, it makes me much more aware of the world around me, right? I'm not just like going from waypoint to waypoint. I'm stopping and being like, those logs look strange. I wonder if I can do anything with them.
I want to see somebody speed run 100% completion Breath of the Wild.
I mean, it's probably like 100% completion will probably take some people, someone playing at like a leisurely pace could take probably up to like 150 hours to 100% complete it.
You'd have to like know after like a certain point, like we're just like where everything is. Cause like I'm thinking like you play it once and then you have to like seriously play it for 100% completion. And then on a like a pro competitive level, wow. Yeah.
I mean, people are beating the game in like about 50 minutes because you can run straight from the tutorial area to Ganon and fight him with like a stick or whatever. Because the game doesn't actually beat you.
I was telling Samson to do that, and then we never figured out how to get down from that one area.
Right. Well, I mean, like the gating is a sort of soft gating where it's like you could just go to Hyrule Castle and fight Ganon, but all the enemies get progressively harder as you get closer, so you have to be really good. I mean, you could do it. There's no item you need to get in there, but like, I tried when the game started. I was like, hey, let's see. And I ran over there, and it was just like insta-kill by all these enemies. And I was like, oh, all right, well, I'm going to have to get a lot smarter, or just I'll get a lot more hearts before I can do that. Anyway, it's the best. I mean, I don't want to say it's literally the best yet, but it is one of the best things I've played in a little while. And there's talk. Some people are putting it at the top of their list of favorite Zelda games and favorite games ever. That's a tough list to get into as far as I'm concerned, but it might be up there.
Well, I don't know. Are we gonna lay it down like right now? Are we gonna say like
No. I mean, but I'm saying like it might hit like number three Zelda game, like right under Ocarina.
I think I might be okay with that.
Yeah, it's like Majora's Mask, we'll Ocarina see. Of Time, Breath of the Wild, possibly.
Well, we're gonna see. So I'm trying to hurry through it so I can play Nier.
Right, there's that, and then Night in the Woods came out, and Mass Effect Andromeda, which is maybe not
Persona
great,
5
is also coming out.
Fucking video games everywhere.
Yeah, video games. Ugh. Just watch anime. Just watch
like
Panzer World Galleon.
Yeah. What? Panzer and Stocking.
Girls and Panzer and Stocking.
All right. Well, this went on for far too long. Let's wrap it up with questions. We got a couple questions. Let's get to these email questions. We were just talking about the Switch. Speaking of, we got an email from Dylan who asks, so the Switch trailer for Mario came out, and I actually don't totally hate the Sonic Adventure games, so I'm excited enough, but it forced a weird question. Is Mario chibi? No, seriously, is he? I just assumed all along everybody looked like him, but the new Donk City scene with real people forces some awkward questions. Mario is basically just cute Umaru-chan now, right? Wait. Is Mario anime? Bowser looked like he belonged more in JoJo's than a Mario game. Nothing makes sense anymore. Really confused, Dylan.
I guess we got to clear this up.
I didn't think about that.
The way I understood it is maybe he's going to like different dimensions in this one, right? Because New Donk City, which is the best name for anything,
has photo real
people in it, and I'm gonna assume Donkey Kong.
Is this is so?
Or maybe
Mario,
just really
it's
awesome.
Super
cars.
Mario Brothers: The Dark Side of Dimensions, or whatever that Yu-Gi-Oh thing is called.
Sure,
going all these different dimensions. It's Magical Shopping Arcade, a Mario Bashi.
It's oh my god, it's like Mario but sliders.
No, it's Who Framed Super Mario is what it is.
Oh boy, so there's like a video game town.
Who framed Super Mario Brothers? Who framed Mario?
Yeah. So,
look, that was definitely my first impression when I saw that. I was like, wait, so what's the deal? So is it like how the Sonic games went, where like Sonic's like making out with like a photorealistic like woman? Is that gonna happen to Mario? Like, that's weird. But
if Mario's
feel like that's
anime,
not the case.
If Mario's anime,
and anime is real,
then that means you can bang Mario.
Oh man.
You heard it here first.
That means it's legal to bang Mario.
Power up on Super Mario's mushroom.
I mean, it wouldn't come out here unless it was legal. So to answer your question, it is legal to fuck Mario.
It's legal to
is
fuck
it
Mario.
Legal to fuck
yeah.
I hope that clears it up, Dylan. It is legal to fuck Mario. That was your question, right?
For the record, this is not Dylan Hazukari. This is a different Dylan. But it right. sure sounds like one of his questions.
This is Dylan from the movie Predator.
You know what?
Double-crosses Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Sonic did it first. He literally did it
first.
It's
true. He was a pioneer.
Yeah.
He got there first. He went fast.
Yeah. He went extremely fast.
All the other jokes that you would make.
Mario's... He used to look like a normal man, and then he went into these pipes over and over, right? And like the sort of force of being projected through these pipes has distorted his body, and he's been squashed.
He's like a horrible chud now.
Yeah, he's been smashed by like the gravity of it.
No, this connection's everywhere. You mentioned Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That's Bob Hoskins, and also
Shit.
The original form
Shit.
Of Mario. So we're seeing
full
after
circle.
Years and years of plumbing, Whatever Mario does, that's
what
he looks
like.
We
haven't exactly confirmed that New Donk City isn't basically just like that weird underground world from the Super Mario movie, except after Giuliani like comes around and like imprisons everybody, basically.
I'm just gonna be really disappointed if they don't find a way to license the Soulja Boy Tell 'Em song "She Got a Donk" for when you first arrive in New Donk City, because that was the first thing I thought of when I saw that trailer.
Wait, Soulja Boy also made a song about anime, so that's right. I think that confirms that Mario is anime.
Mario is anime, and Soulja Boy, it is legal to fuck Mario. Thanks for getting in touch with us, Soulja Boy.
Yeah. I actually just got an email from Soulja Boy confirming that it's legal to fuck Mario. So,
nice.
Yeah. Look
for the Mario Tell 'Em mixtape.
That's right. Yeah.
It's coming.
So let's go on to your friend and mine, best friend of the podcast, Inaki, who asks via email. He says, "Dear Venom Punished Minto, the loyal AG audience are very familiar with your co-host's predilection for banging and or violence. But is there a 2D lady or franchise that has ensnared your heart?" No, because waifus and all that shit is bad. Just like hang out with people in real life. Don't attach your emotions that strongly to cartoon characters unless it's a shark. That's okay.
I honestly thought that for the longest time that Evan's just been hiding something from us. You know, just
that I have a hidden mysteries.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's gotta be something out there. I honestly refuse to believe that you have completely cut yourself off from 2D.
Listen.
Like 2D is cool now. It wasn't cool when I was into it.
You just haven't met the right 2D girl, is that what you're saying?
2D's not vivid enough.
Are you saving yourself for like 2D marriage or something?
Listen, my 2D religion says I can't bang in 2D, but I can bang in 3D.
Let me tell you something. From experience, marriage doesn't work with 2D.
But the whole concept is it's your waifu, right? Like, doesn't that imply marriage?
Yeah.
It's more of like a common law marriage.
Wait, is divorce legal in 2D?
Divorce.
If you can fuck Mario, then I think you can get divorced in 2D.
Okay, well, cool.
Does Mario count as 2D because he's on a screen even though his graphics are 3D?
Is Mario 3D or 2D? That's a good question.
I think it depends on who you ask. Some people would say that he's 3D. I sort of think that 2D is more like a worldview. More than it is
it's like a state of mind, dimension. Man.
It's a state of mind. Like, Mario is 2D, even if he's depicted in 3D.
Which explains why he looks that way in New Donk City.
Right. He's the only 2D person. Everybody else there is 3D.
Yeah, Mario's the only developed character
It's all connected. It's all one big web.
I mean, my usual answer when I'm trying to be somewhat serious is I'm like, there's female characters I like. In the sense of, like, they're cool characters who I, you know, appreciate as characters.
No, we're not talking about whose characters and who's cool. We're talking about, like the style of wanting to bang the shark from Zelda. Okay? I don't want, like, your whole, you know, heartfelt story with the character. I just want to know, who do you thirst for?
Nobody.
Shit.
That's my real answer.
Have you ever thirsted, though?
No, I haven't. I know. Honestly, I never had, like, crushes on fictional characters. It's not a thing.
You're a broken man, Evan. That's all you are.
I don't know. It's weird. People tell me about that, and I'm like, that's interesting. But, like, nah.
To be honest, I haven't had anything like that since, like, middle school. So I'm kind of with you there.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was, like, a Tenchi Muyo character.
Oh, that's right.
Which should really
You shouldn't have
place
admitted
it.
That on a microphone.
That's rough.
Hey, I didn't admit which one.
What's going on here, man? So the last time I thirsted for a 2D character might have been, like, I don't know, a few hours ago.
I'd say let's move on, because we have a couple questions that maybe we can try to answer fast from Twitter, from Inazzle Dazzle, your friend and mine. Just watched Mobile Suit Gundam 00 and watching Iron-Blooded Orphans. New to Gundam, what should I watch next? preferably available on Crunchyroll, Funimation, Hulu, or Netflix. If only we had somebody on the podcast who knew a lot about Gundam.
If only.
So I actually did see this question ahead of time, and I made sure I knew what was streaming where. And so it seems like Hulu is probably your best bet as far as the selection, where you can watch this 00, IBO, Seed, 8th MS Team Wing, and The Origin. And while The Origin has kind of a deceptive title, you might think that's a good place to like start on like old school Gundam. It's really only meant for people who are either familiar with like the characters already from like either the manga or the original show. So I would say definitely don't start with The Origin. That's something to get into later on. So like, I'd say the best things to get into are either like the 8th MS Team is probably like, I know a lot of people really like, it's pretty short. It's like 12, 13 episodes. It's basically, it's been described by a lot of people as like the Vietnam War, like jungle era or like jungle style combat with giant robots. It's pretty well beloved. I like it a lot. Sure, Gundam Wing, why not? Like, that dub is amusing. But it's 50-some-odd episodes. So I would definitely say, go with 8th MS Team to be the next one after you've just watched two 50-episode-long shows, because that'll be kind of a way to ease into Universal Century, which is, like, the majority of the Gundam shows. It's also kind of tricky because, like, he doesn't say, or he or she, they don't say, like, what they like about 00 or IBO. Yeah. But yeah, I'm going to say 8th MS Team should be the next, probably best and most convenient one to watch next.
Do you not recommend watching like the original trilogy? The like first
Gundam trilogy? I would, but the thing is, it's not like, I mean, outside of like this person said like streaming specifically. Yeah, that's a good point. I absolutely would. If you're like fine with watching older anime, like if that doesn't bother you, I know like a lot of people are kind of picky right. about that. But yeah, I would definitely say watch that, especially if you're like, if you're not really sure how you feel about like Universal Century Gundam. Right.
I really like that trilogy as like a starting point for people.
Yeah. And especially if someone's between like, well, should I watch the whole show or should I just watch the movies? Like the movies are long. Like, don't get me wrong. They're like 3 hours a pop. Like that's still 9 hours of your time. But I mean, the original show is like 43 episodes. And it varies wildly in animation quality a lot of the time. You get a pretty consistent, good experience from the original trilogy. And that tends to be the one that's recommended the most.
Yeah.
I personally think the TV series, like, there's a lot of stuff I like in this stuff that's just in the show, just in the TV show. And I find a lot of the kind of the goofier or, like, worse animation kind of endearing at this point. But, you know, for someone who's like a new fan, they might not feel that way right away. So yeah, basically if streaming is the only option, 8th MS Team on Hulu, if you've got that. If it's not, I'd say, yeah, just, you know, go with the original. It's on DVD right now. I know Right Stuff is putting out, the Blu-ray version is supposed to come out in June. So that's probably going to look great because all of their, releases have been pretty top notch so far.
So that's it for questions. If you want to send us questions via email, podcast@anygamers.com is the email address that you should use. You can also tweet at us anytime. I am @VamptVo, VamptVo.
I am @QX20XX.
And you can also tweet at AniGamers. That's @ANIGamers. One word. I still say the ANI, even though you all know how to spell it because you're listening to the show. But yeah, we tweet from there when we call out for questions. We sometimes tweet from the other accounts too.
I'm @TomTom, that's T-O-M, y'all know how to write Tom, Aznable, A-Z-N-A-B-L-E.
He's Ashar.
Yeah, it's true.
And you can also go check out anygamers.com/podcast for show notes and other information about the podcast. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Leave us reviews on those places. Actually, we did get some reviews on iTunes, so I may read those next episode. Forgot to pull those up this time. But I think some of them, they might have been funny. No, I think they might have been just normal ones. Remember, if you left your review while under the influence of some kind of substance, let us know in the review, because then we'll read it. We've guaranteed that previously on this podcast. Also, go to anniegamers.com to read our articles about stuff. I wrote about Zelda recently. I'm going to try to maybe write a review of that and some other stuff. I'm writing for Otaku USA magazine occasionally. Still got to get back in the swing of things now that I have my new job. And David, you writing stuff? Have you written stuff lately for your thing, qx20xx.tumblr.com?
I got something possibly in the oven for qx20xx.tumblr.com. But if not, check out the Kimono Friends write-up. Now that Kimono Friends is exponentially more relevant with every passing week.
I have quickly turning into an Anna Twitter mega meme.
That I was there from the jump. I'm on the right side of history here on the Kimono Friends. So you know.
All right. And Tom, what are you up to? You've got some stuff, some writing you're doing.
Yeah. So folks can catch me the weekend of the 24th at Anime Boston at the All the Mecha You'll Ever Need panel. I believe it's Saturday at 1, but definitely consult your schedule. I also write articles for Zimmerit.moe. I recently, in January, we put up an article that was a result of a few months of my own research looking into a canceled, in pre-development, like 1983 Hollywood live-action Gundam movie. It's really interesting. I managed to get in touch with the guy who would have been the director and who actually wrote the first draft of the script and got all this concept art together. So I think it's pretty interesting. And we'll actually going to be trying to read a scene from the script at the Anime Boston panel with my fellow panelists. So that should be fun. I'm also working on a couple other things down the pike, also Gundam related, also like trying to keep it on like the weird, forgotten, obscure Gundam stuff. And so that's basically where I'm at. So yeah, it's zimmerit.moe. That's Zimmerit. You know how to write moe.
Oh, yes, you do.
All right. And actually, speaking of panels, for me, I'll be at Fanime coming up in May. And I haven't heard back yet on which panels I got, but let's just say they like got in touch with me, and I'm going to be doing a lot of panels at that convention. They still have to decide which ones I'm going to be doing. But I submitted 8 of them, so that should tell you.
Just hope for 8 of 8.
Yeah, so that's out in San Jose, California. So if you're out on this coast, you're probably already going to Fanime. But if you are going, you should come see my panels. And if you're not, you should consider going. Fanime's all right. I'm trying to give them some better panels. They've got some nice people running that panels department, but they don't get enough good panel applications from people. So, yeah.
Fanime is all right now that Evan is there.
With his 8 panels.
That is it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Tom, for coming on the show and putting up with me and David. Just talking nonstop about Zelda. Now I'm going to release David from his contract that he's signed with me so he can go back to playing Zelda. Also, that's exactly what I'm going to do. So, later. Okay, David.
Okay.
I think it's time.
Is it time? Let me just sell this one thing.
One day the podcast will start, and that'll be an interesting
day. This game
day.
Is the worst. I mean, it's my fault, too, for starting late, but, like, also, I blame Zelda.